Hey listeners, this is your host Abir Sichter with another episode of Local Global Leaders. This episode is titled Philanthropist Who Masquerades as a Business Person, and I had the honor of joining Tao Green, owner and operator of Crank and Boom Ice Cream here in Lexington. Throughout our conversation, Tao reflects on the family values that shaped her journey, her path as a serial entrepreneur, and the amazing creativity behind her work. In her story, she talks about working in her family's restaurant to launching her own beloved ice cream business that's rooted in joy, community, and care for others. We also talked about her commitment to fresh, high-quality ingredients, her passion for empowering fellow restaurateurs, and the importance of getting involved to create meaningful change. And I want to give her a special thank you for the generous pints of ice cream and coupons she shared with WUKY staff and myself. Now, here's our conversation.
Greetings, listeners. This is Abir Sichter coming to you from WUKY radio station with another episode of Local Global Leaders. I'm here this morning with Tao Green. Tao, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We're so excited to have the founder of Crank and Boom, and I really appreciate you bringing me a couple free pints of Crank and Boom ice cream.
Oh, yes. I have ice cream will travel. So most places I go, I try to bring some ice cream along with me. So I appreciate you having me this morning.
Awesome. I appreciate the flavors you got. I know the cookies and cream, the caramel delight, right?
Yes. Coconut caramel delight, coconut, which is like our Samoa cookies, and magical marshmallows.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
For Lucky Charms ice cream, and peanut butter cup, and the cookies and cream.
Yeah.
Well, favorite.
Thank you so much. I'm going to try to share some with the staff here. I'll try to take them all home, but we'll see what happens.
When I bring stuff, I don't put any stipulations about sharing, so it's really up to the discretion of the receiver.
Awesome. Good to know. But thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. Really want to hear your story, and specifically I'd like to start off with your six-word story. What are six words you use to describe yourself?
Oh, gosh. I would first and foremost call myself a mom. I have two little ones, 6 and 8 years old, Bodhi and Bindi, who are my world in life. I would say family. Family is the most important thing in my whole life. Anyone who knows me well knows that that's always my priority. Entrepreneur. I've always been kind of a serial entrepreneur, pretty much. I always have ideas running in my head nonstop. I don't know if that is a curse or a blessing. Foodie. I am obsessed with food. So I feel like I am in the right industry, in the right field. How many is that? Is that five?
I think that's five. Oh, five. Four, actually.
Four. I would say like TV junkie. I like love TV. And I don't know, just listless wanderer of the world.
Nice.
That's a lot of words.
That's a great description. And what motivates you to step up as a leader in your community, particularly with entrepreneurship?
Like I said, I think a lot of the things that are part of my personality, whether it's a curse or a blessing with leadership, I see things and then I feel like the only way to, if I'm unhappy with it or see that there's something that I'd like to be more involved with to see change, the only way for me to do it is to get involved. So I think it's partly selfish, too, because I really like meeting people around town. And I've found that I've learned so much as a leader and as a business person from other people around me, especially people who aren't even in our industry, just other leaders. I find that a lot of issues that leaders encounter are universal, no matter what industry you're in or what group of people you are working with, because essentially people are people. And when you're leading people, those different challenges that you face are universal. So I think what motivates me is mostly I want to see just goodness in our community. And like I said, selfishly, I enjoy being around other people. I love learning. I love being able to bring joy and happiness and motivation to the people around me, which I feel like I usually do in the spaces that I enter. And if I can bring the message of joy and positivity in those spaces, then I'm going to find as many spaces to get into as I can.
I think those are great messages to bring forward. Definitely, like I did it this morning with the free ice cream.
The ice cream helps. It definitely helps.
Yeah. And it was, I loved when we were, before we were recording, when you came in, we were talking to Clay, one of the new staff, about how he's actually known your family's restaurant in Frankfurt.
Yeah.
But I was curious, like, how has your family's background in business and running that restaurant like inspired your journey?
Oh, gosh. I think it is the full foundation of everything that I'm able to do now. You know, at the time when I was seven in our restaurant, I, of course, did not like working. I didn't like learning what excellence meant. I didn't know what hard work meant until it was taught to me without my approval. No one asked me to do those things. But now, looking back and having all that experience as a kid, being able to learn sales, public relations, communications, talking to strangers, working hard when things are tough and all you want to do is go to sleep, but the work has to get done. All those really incredible values are the foundation of everything that I have done now. And I thank my parents for instilling those in me, even though I griped about it at the time. I didn't know that it was going to help me in my life now, but I have that experience working in that restaurant alongside my parents. I thank them for everything that I am able to do now, because I wouldn't have that foundation and I wouldn't have the level of experience and knowledge when it comes to hospitality and service and hard work and just knowing how to take care of people and how to really have this intense obsession with quality and making sure that things are done a specific way and making sure that the people around you understand that we do things a certain way. So I have them to thank for everything.
That's amazing. And it's awesome to hear how that inspired, you know, you to kind of understand like how with providing service and like, you know, giving people something. How did they also inspire, you know, you mentioned you're a serial entrepreneur. How did growing up in the restaurant industry like inspire that?
Well, I think what I really fell in love with was this idea of being able to create your own destiny. So, you know, my parents at the time, this was back in 1990, there was no Thai restaurant in town and they had no blueprint. They had never been entrepreneurs before. My grandfather was an entrepreneur. And so I think it was in the family. And I think they saw growing up what it was like to have a business and run it as a family business and be able to kind of dictate your own destiny to a certain extent. And I think they did not see certain opportunities for themselves. At the time, my dad was working in catering and was a bartender. And my mom was working at the state. And I think they saw that, you know, they could probably only do so much within those roles. So, you know, you're good. You know, my mom loves cooking and my dad was great at front of house service. So, well, we should open a restaurant. So they did. So they had no plan. They didn't have anybody to tell them how to do that. They didn't have investors or anyone to financially back them. They just went all in. So I think that process and being able to see them in their business really dictated how I grew up. So partially, I think it's genetic. And then partially, it's the environment that you're surrounded by. And I think I saw them work so hard. And, you know, I basically got one kind of real normal job working a marketing job. But then it really, really came very clear to me that I was not going to be someone that was going to do well working for someone else. So I think that became very clear pretty fast. And then I came more at peace with having a job that I could control to a certain extent, that I could control my destiny and that I could build a business that could make an impact. And that was really important to me.
It sounds like the perfect emblem of like, kind of like the American dream to like to control your own destiny.
And yeah, absolutely.
And what inspired you to specifically go into ice cream and the ice cream industry?
Well, it wasn't on purpose. Like most things, I think so many great things in life kind of fall upon you when you're not really asking for it. And, you know, at the time we had a restaurant called Thai Orchid Cafe, which opened in 2006. And my parents and I had opened that. It's over in the spot next to KS Bar now, in that little spot off of campus. And we opened that little restaurant and worked it kind of like our restaurant back in Frankfurt. And my parents were ready to re-retire after I pulled them out of semi-retirement to open this restaurant with me. And my husband and I took over the restaurant. We purchased the restaurant from them, took over the business. And I really was just looking for a dessert option in the Thai restaurant. So I love the coconut ice cream that they have in Thailand. They have them in little carts on the street everywhere. And it was one of my favorite things about being in Thailand. And so I wanted to bring and capture that experience and bring it here to our restaurant. So I bought a $60 Cuisinart home ice cream maker off of Amazon and got some looked at some YouTube videos on how to make ice, because I'd never made ice cream before. I didn't know what the process was, and then found a recipe online. So, you know, thank you to the internet for educating me on how to do this ice cream thing, because I didn't know anything about it at the time, and started serving coconut ice cream in our restaurant. And people were real excited. I was very happy with how it turned out. And I got excited about maybe making other flavors. So we're already going to the farmer's market for other produce for the restaurant. And while I was there shopping, I thought, oh, there should be other fun ingredients that maybe we could turn into ice cream flavors. So the first flavor we made was coconut ice cream. The second flavor we made was actually sweet potato pie. So we got local sweet potatoes from Elmwood Stock Farm in Georgetown. And they said, please take these sweet potatoes. And I turned a few sweet potatoes into ice cream. And I thought it was the funnest, coolest experience. And people seemed to really respond to that. And so I kept making other fun flavors like coffee stout, blueberry lime cheesecake. The Lucky Charms was one of the originals that I made in the restaurant, and just really toyed around with a different way of thinking about ice cream. Because at the time, ice cream was very overproduced. It was pretty much you take a ice cream base, you pour some flavorings into it and call it strawberry ice cream. And I really wanted to bring back that craftiness. And so this was at the time, this is about 2011, 2012, when the craft movement was coming up. So West Six and Craft Beer and Blue Stallion and Country Boy were all doing their craft beer thing. And we were seeing this shift in the food industry too, with people being more interested in knowing where their food was coming from and who was making it, and really leaned into that and really wanted to take what produce and what ingredients I could, smash them into ice cream and see how it turned. And it turned out that it made amazing ice cream. And so that's how I kind of fell into it. And eventually my husband and I, we had enough interest from our restaurant, people coming in, ordering ice cream. This was maybe 6 months into my ice cream making journey. People would come and just get ice cream and not order Thai food in the Thai restaurant. So I thought that was kind of interesting. It kept happening over and over again. And then people started asking, will we pack it in little pints? And I said, well, I don't know how to do that, but here's some soup containers. So I would make the ice cream, pack them in a little soup container, and, you know, put it out there for people to buy, and could see that there was a big interest in this ice cream that had no name at the time. It was just our ice cream that we had for our restaurant. And what we had this really pivotal moment where this was January and it was sideways blizzarding outside. And of course, there's no customers in the restaurant, so we're all just waiting around to kill time so we can go home. And I saw a lady pull up in her car, and I was sitting at the counter inside the restaurant. And she came out and she had a kind of Eskimo parka in this blizzard. And she comes in and I ask, you know, can I help you? What can I get for you? And she said, oh, no, I'm just here for some ice cream. So she was just picking out the couple soup containers of ice cream. And it's, you know, blizzarding outside. I said, you don't want any food? And she said, nope, no thanks. And she took her ice cream and left. And I remember looking at my husband and thinking, maybe there's something about this ice cream thing. And that evolved to maybe we can take the ice cream and sell it at the farmer's market since we're already there. It makes sense that we could be at the, you know, we're using ingredients from the farmer's market. Can we go and sell it at the farmer's market? What would that be like? We've never scooped to an audience other than in a restaurant. What would that mean? Regulatory-wise, what would that mean? We would have to get a machine that was not the $60 Cuisinart, because that only makes 2 quarts at a time each day. So there were a lot of other questions, but it really felt good and felt like the right next step to say, okay, we're going to give this ice cream its own name, its own brand, its own life, and we'll do it as a cute little side thing in the summertime when the restaurant is not as busy. So that's how it evolved. And then on May 16th of 2013, we launched Crank and Boom as a brand, and that was our first event that we actually scooped ice cream out to the public. And this was at Thursday Night Live downtown. And I remember getting to that point with the branding and ordering a mobile cart, getting our tent, getting T-shirts. I was just happy to open. I didn't actually care if we had sold even a scoop of ice cream. I was just happy to launch the brand, get it out in the world, and get started kind of on this next big journey for us. But that's how the ice cream came about.
That's an amazing journey to take, like, you know, seeing that main product, that one, that there was the interest of the restaurant, but two, that you kind of were passionate about yourself, like, and then mm-hmm. turn it into something. If people can the public pitch like flavors to you, or how does like new flavor creation
work? Oh yeah, absolutely. People do all the time. We always take suggestions. I get lots of ideas. We have people who ask for ones that are in the flavor vault, which haven't been around for a while. So this April we are bringing back taro, which is a flavor that was also one of our originals, but it's based off of taro bubble tea, which is one of my favorite drinks. And this was before bubble tea became a thing. Now bubble tea is a thing, and enough people who are in love with that flavor sent enough messages that said, will you please bring back taro? So it's coming back. So if you can build your own campaign with your friends to harass us enough, it might happen. So you never know when the next new flavor will be like your suggestion.
And you know, how many total flavors do you have?
So we have 20 in the case at a time. Usually it is 15 of our signature flavors and then 5 of our rotating kind of monthly flavors. But then of ones that we have made, I think we actually listed out how many we have made, and it's in the 300 something of flavors that we've made. So usually, you know, for the monthly special small batch flavors, we bring back ones that people know and really love. And then every once in a while, we'll throw in some new ones just for fun and to see what people like. So it is always this evolving, fun process, picking the flavors that we release.
Yeah, definitely sounds like a fun and very creative and very like heartwarming process as well. But I also want to ask, you know, you mentioned all the positives and the successes with that. Like, what are also the biggest struggles you've encountered in your leadership journey?
Oh, gosh. There's not a long enough show to talk about that. Honestly, I think there are more hard times than have been good times. But I think the good parts are so filled with good that it makes it worth all the stuff that is really hard. I think in the very beginning, the biggest challenge was regulatory issues. We were doing something that no one had ever done before. Like I said, traditionally with ice cream, you have an ice cream base, you have a flavoring off the shelf, you put them together and you run them through a machine and it's called ice cream. But we were putting fresh ingredients in, which from a food safety standpoint is not seemingly kosher. Hmm. And so we have to have a specific process to make sure that all our food safety is all in order and that all the FDA and dairy folks are happy with that. And so once we worked through that, it was a lot better, but it was definitely a challenge trying to find the right person to tell us what those regulations were and how to make sure that we were in compliance. So that was a difficult thing as well. You know, when we opened our shop on Manchester Street, we were kind of the first non-bar to serve alcohol. So you see all the coffee shops now that have alcohol, or I think there's a laundromat that might serve alcohol now. Oh. So we were one of the first ones to kind of non-traditionally serve alcohol with ice cream. So that was its own regulatory hurdle. So we had a lot of these crazy ideas that people had never really heard about before. So it was working through, what does that look like? How is that regulated? How do we make all the people who are making sure that we're doing all the right things are happy and that we are doing the right things? Because that's always one of our top priorities, is making sure everything is in compliance. But I would say that was difficult in the beginning. And then, you know, the journey, I mentioned just people are people. And the world is always changing. People are always changing. And so that's this ever-evolving thing that we're always trying to figure out, is how do we best work with our team? You know, we usually work, the bulk of our team is folks who are high school and college age. And so that group doesn't really change, but we change. Apparently I get older, and so the gap between me and that age group gets bigger. So before it was like working with peers, and now it is not, because I am not in college anymore, and it's been some years since I have been. So I think always trying to figure out how we can best serve our team and how we can still hold really great standards while, you know, leading with humanity and leading with compassion, but also trying to hold standards at the same time. So it is always a challenge. And sometimes people that you believe in disappoint you, and sometimes people you love break your heart. So I think that people piece of leadership is always the hardest. Now, some people are much better at compartmentalizing that piece, but I'm such a heart person that it's hard for me. But I think that's also something, even though it's hard for me, it's also one of my superpowers too, is being able to feel so deeply. That I think that is what makes me a unique leader versus someone who can, you know, maybe has a harder heart than I do.
Yeah. And I think too, it's like that, it sounds like you're touching on that emotional toll of leadership, like with personal relationships, when someone isn't able to be there for you or just, yeah, you know, does something, but like that passion and care, I mean, that's what drives you in the first place, right?
Yeah, so 100%. And I used to think, okay, well, maybe I need to be mean and yell at people and maybe not care as much. And then I've come to peace with, this is who I am, and I don't know how to lead any other way. And so if I get my heart broken in the process, that is just the price of being this way. And I would rather be this way than be, I guess, a harder heart. Mm-hmm. And live in the world, you know, being scared of what people might do to my heart. You know what I mean? So I'm at peace with that. I'm like, this is who I am. This are things that might happen to my heart if I go this way, and I am okay with that. So it's definitely been a process to kind of work through that.
And do you have, like, have you seen examples or experienced toxic leadership from other people, and how has that affected you?
Oh, sure. I think there's plenty of toxic leadership out there. I think part of wanting to be an entrepreneur and wanting to be someone who is a leader that has a position of influence and can create certain types of jobs for people, I think one of the main motivations is, especially in the food industry, is we don't have to do that. There's a certain, like if you watch Anthony Bourdain and all these things on TV with what the food industry is like, it generally feels very toxic, and you know, there's Gordon Ramsay yelling at you, and it's just not a great environment. And I came up in some of that, and I kind of, maybe not out loud, but said, like, I don't ever want to create an environment like that for people. And I feel like, as much to my control, we have done that. We want to have a safe space. We want to have a place where people can land. I always call our place, I want it to be a soft place to land for people. So people who either it's their first job, or it is a place where they might not know exactly where they want to go long term, but they can come here, put some money in their pocket, maybe learn some skills, and then take what they learn and go off to the next thing. And I've always been very passionate about that, making sure that we are that soft place to land. And not just for our team, but for our community too. Like, we want our physical spaces to be safe spaces that people can come and celebrate, they can come and mourn, they can come and be sad, they can come and feel like they are seen and welcome. And that has always been most important to me. But yes, there has been plenty of toxic environments that I have been in, and I think that's the motivation to try and do the opposite in trying to make sure that we are not doing those kind of things that happen in leadership sometimes.
Yeah. It's funny, when you were saying that, it reminded me, one of my first guests on the show was Rob Perez, the founder of Deviate Kitchen.
Yes.
He said the same thing, like, growing up in the restaurant industry,
oh, yeah,
seeing the show, it's like, oh, it's presented as all toxic. And he's he said, like, he's seen some of that, but it's also like, well, you know, we can lead differently.
Yes, so. 100%. And it is changing. And I feel glad that it is changing, because it doesn't, I think there's a certain badge of honor when you live through that toxicity and you're able to grind through this and do that because you're able to survive that sort of environment. But I don't know if that's like very healthy for anybody. Yeah. So the fact that now we have leaders who are changing that and leading with compassion and being that soft space to land for people, and that it doesn't, even I've seen like Top Chef, if you remember the beginnings of Top Chef, people were very brutal and really competitive. And now the kind of the essence of Top Chef is like, we help each other and we're all in this together, even though we're competing and we're friends. And even that has changed. So I think you can see that that environment doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah. And that makes me think of, like, you know, we think of, I mean, especially in business, but in various industries, of like, you have to go through all this tough situations, all this abuse, and it goes into the idea of survivorship bias, that the people who make it through that, they're like, well, we survived, so that's how it works. And they don't think about how you might be crushing the spirit of other entrepreneurs, other restaurateurs potentially, who just needed collaboration. They didn't need tough love. They just needed support, but you didn't let them make it through the process.
So. Right. Yeah, and, you know, it's like anything else, you know, there's a certain level of hazing that is in certain environments, and I don't think that it really has to be that way. I think you can still grow and you can still be tough and you can still, I mean, the world is hard enough. We don't need to make it harder for people. And if there's a way to do that in a way where people can still learn and do what they need to do without all that extra toxicity, I mean, that's the ideal scenario.
Mm-hmm. And it's great to hear how, like, holistically you're thinking about the environment and sort of the I guess the system and the community you create from, like, you know, wanting to be that comfortable space for your customers, but also wanting to, like, with your staff, particularly, you know, young people, this could be their first job, like, help them feel comfortable in their first job, get that skill development for their future, whether they want to continue working for you or do something else in the future. So it's really, I love that, like, holistic and sort of wraparound thought you have of, like, you know, we want to, it's like you're spreading that joy of, like, comfort and happiness and message, like, that message, like, all across all the ways you function, right?
Yeah. And, you know, when it comes to our team and leadership, I don't have a certain expectation that our high school and college kids are going to be with us 20 years from now. I don't think that's a realistic expectation, and leading in that way is silly. So, you know, even, you know, I have a little orientation video that is shown to every new teammate. And I very specifically say, I don't, however long we are together, be it 2 weeks or 200 years, I hope that we make the most of our time together. So I hope you put some money in your pocket. I hope that you help us build the business and keep it going in the way that we want it to. I hope that we have a mutually beneficial relationship. And that's how I view anything. I want to have mutually beneficial relationships that both people, it's a win-win. We like win-wins all around. So, you know, with our team, you're providing a service. I am providing a job. We get to work together and learn from each other. And if it helps our business grow or continue in the way that we need it to be, then that to me is a super win-win.
And how would you describe kind of your leadership style or philosophy?
I'm very chill. I didn't used to be that way. I don't know how my teammates might describe me. But a lot of times when, you know, someone is sounding the panic alarm, and usually I'm like, it's going to be okay, guys. We'll figure this out. I do have very high standards, so I'm very demanding in that way, but I'm not a yelling type person. And I know where my own skill sets are not as strong. And so I try to find people who will kind of complement those skill sets. So if I'm not super strong in numbers or operations, I surround myself with people who are. If I am not strong in certain creative realms, I try to surround myself with people who can fill those gaps. But yeah, I am very chill pill. I usually, you know, but I am also very good with saying that's not how we do things. We need to do better, or following up. And one thing that I actually is a great lesson learned from Ted Lasso. I don't know if you watch Ted Lasso. Yep. Is be curious. Mm-hmm. And so now when I teach our leaders in our team, is like we lead with curiosity. We don't lead with accusations because it usually doesn't end well. So if, you know, for example, if the store was not swept appropriately the night before and somebody notices, we don't automatically accuse that Bobby Sue, who closed last night, did a terrible job. Let's ask Bobby Sue why this might have happened. Maybe something happened, someone had to leave early, or they were short-staffed, but we try to lead with curiosity and not with accusations. And I think that has saved us from damaging relationships, because once you damage trust within a team, it will become very toxic. And trust is very hard to build back once you have destroyed it. So we try to make sure that we have the benefit of the doubt, not just for our staff, but also for customers. You know, we assume, we always try to assume the best of what's going on and that everyone is trying to do their best. Mm-hmm. So if somebody comes in with a certain energy that maybe might not be the greatest, well, we don't know what's going on in their life. They might have just gotten the worst news of their whole life and they're trying to process. And so our job, being a soft place to land, is to make sure that whoever comes in our door, that they leave in a better place than when they came. So if they're having something that they're celebrating, that we gave them some ice cream and they had a great experience and now they are a little happier than when they came in or more excited about their dish that they got, whatever it may be. And then if someone has terrible news, which we have encountered, people who have come from the hospital or had a death in the family, and they're coming just to have a quiet place to enjoy something, to feel better, then that's our job too, is to make sure that, you know, if they're coming from a hard place, that we're there to support them. And sometimes that's hard because sometimes people don't have the greatest energy when they're coming in, but we don't know what's going on in someone's life. So we try to make sure that we give them the benefit of the doubt too.
I love you mentioning Ted Lasso. I've had a couple other guests mention that, and the idea of curious, like being curious.
Yes.
I've been actually rewatching the show to get ready for season four this summer.
Oh, so. Yes. And I need to rewatch it too. It's so many good lessons from Ted Lasso that I think it should be its own leadership course in itself, watching Ted Lasso.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of leadership course and components, I sort of see these three components of my own leadership theory. There is being an effective motivator, a competent manager, and a supportive mentor. So kind of my three M's of motivator, manager, and mentor. How do you see those three roles? And do you see them as like three separate things or all kind of three unified things of leadership?
Oh, I think it's three unified things. I think being a leader is very nuanced, but I think those three M components have to be part of that because no matter what, you're probably in some sort of mentorship relationship with somebody. And I say that in a sense of you've probably walked a path that somebody you are working with has not walked that path yet. So whether it's, you know, about jobs, maybe not even about ice cream specifically, but, you know, everyone that's on our team wants to continue working. And if we can provide some skills and mentorship with how you become a better employee, how you can become a entrepreneur someday, whatever information is helpful. Even just service. I think everyone needs a food service job because I think you need to learn how to serve other people. And no matter, I can't think of any job that you can do in isolation. Maybe now with AI, you probably can. But for the most part, you're dealing with people in some capacity. So having the skill set to serve and be able to do that is important across the board. But, you know, management, being able to manage either, whether it's people or processes or projects, any of that, all of that is very important because that's the actual doing. And then what was your first M?
Motivator.
Yes. So I think if you're going to be a leader, you have to have a certain realm of influence. So whether you have people that agree with you or not, you need to get those people across a certain finish line, whatever that might look like. So if everyone is not on board with that, it's going to make it very difficult for you as a leader. So I always try to get as much buy-in as I can. I know that not everyone always agrees with me, but I think I have a pretty good skill set being able to say, this is what we're going to do. This is what I would like to do. This is why. Please pick it apart and tell me what things could go wrong. If everyone feels good about it, we're going to proceed. So I think having that skill set to not just, you know, say, this is what we're doing, too bad, get over it. But that's just not how I operate. I always like to feel like I have vetted out all the things that could go wrong. And usually that knowledge is with other people if it's in a space that I'm not super familiar with. So I think you need all three of those things to be an effective leader because those are the main pillars of what it is to be a leader.
And do you have, between the three M's, do you have a favorite or one you're best at, you think?
The management part is probably my weakest of those three. And then I would probably say the kind of influence piece is probably my strongest suit. I feel like I am pretty good at collectively getting people on board if I feel like it's the right thing and moving us forward and not getting stuck. And then I feel like the mentor piece is something that kind of comes naturally too, because I like teaching and I want to make sure that people are taken care of. So that would be my ranking of those three.
And I want to know, like, you know, I've asked questions about your leadership style and your personal background. I want to ask about, like, how you think about the world and your leadership and your work. So how does, like, you know, what's happening in the world affect your business and affect you as a leader in Kentucky? And how do you think of that with, like, the idea, I guess, of global citizenship while being a business owner?
Oh, sure. I think it's very tone deaf to say politics doesn't affect me. So those people who can separate those things and say, well, that's just politics and that doesn't affect anything that I do, is someone that is not affected by those policies. So I think it is very important to be engaged and involved and to voice what your opinion is, where you stand on different issues. I have always been very vocal about where I stand on social issues, and I think that is part of my whole idea of wanting to be a safe space for people, especially people from marginalized communities. You know, me coming from several marginalized communities, it you just see how you exist in the world differently. I am married to an older white male who is straight, and he has a different existence in the world than I do. And he, you know, we've been together for 20 years, and he's been able to see how those things are different. And he's always been compassionate, but I think it's different when you see when somebody is going through certain things and how people are treated differently from things that they have no control over. And so I think for me as a business, you know, I always say I'm a philanthropist who masquerades as a business person. Honestly, I use the business as a vehicle for my philanthropy and my care for the world. And so I've always wanted to fight for just a better world to leave to my kids. And just, I feel like we've been blessed enough as humans to exist on Earth that we have an obligation to give back in what capacity we can. And that doesn't even mean you have to be a gazillionaire to give money back. That means taking care of your neighbor. That means looking after the kids in your neighborhood, giving to your school, becoming a more engaged citizen. There's lots of ways to give back. And I've always, again, I don't know if it's a curse or a blessing, but I was always felt very compelled to do things and be involved and to speak out on things that are important to me. And I've always felt like if I can be brave, and other people have been brave ahead of me to speak out on things that matter to them, even if it might have a negative effect on business, then that means more to me than what it might do to the business. But what I have found over the years, because nothing has changed. We've always been very vocal about where we stand on certain issues. And what I have found is, you know, when you are who you are in business or as a person, my personal and my business blend very deeply. I don't have it as two separate pockets. I represent myself as I do in the business and share those values because I think it's important. But you know, I think when you share who you are, you attract the right people for your business. So if somebody doesn't like our pride flags that we have in both our stores and that makes them feel some way that they don't want to patronize our business, that is their perfect right. But what that does do, and I've heard this from many people in our community, is having those flags up automatically, you know, lets certain families drop their shoulders because they know it's a safe space and they know that it is a place that they can be and not just welcome, but celebrated. And I think that to me has always been important, is that we celebrate the diversity of our world. And that means background, sexual orientation, male, female, where you come from. I'm so fascinated by the world and how people are so different, and want to celebrate that and want a community that celebrates that. And that's what I love about Lexington, mm-hmm. is that it is such a welcoming place and people are so friendly and people are curious about other people's lives. And I think that's why it's been so amazing to live here and have our business here. But yes, all these things that happen in the world, it's it's overwhelming, especially as someone who is on social media and has to consume social media while being on social media. It can be very just overwhelming, all the inputs that come from the world. But I try to combat that by adding good things onto social media. I was like, well, if I'm going to be inundated with all this bad news, what I can do is offer positivity and good news to fight all of that, because I think we're all yearning for connection, and I think we're all yearning for peace and less chaos. And so if I can contribute to that in some way, I'm very happy to do that. But yeah, it is very tone deaf to say that the things that are happening in the world don't affect your business. And from an operational standpoint, you know, tariffs have affected our business. Fuel going up affects our business. The state of the economy, we are a premium product in our industry. And so if people have less money in their pocket, they're less likely to patronize our business. So all these things affect our business in a very deep way. And that is part of the puzzle all the time, is how do we adjust and make sure that we can still survive when the elements around us are changing all the time.
I love hearing how you think of service in the work you do, because I've interviewed nonprofit leaders and people in government who say, you know, that's a driving role for them. But it's great to hear that a business person also sees that as a core aspect of your role.
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, again, business to me is almost secondary to the ability to have a platform and to have impact. And, you know, maybe my accountant doesn't like me thinking that way. But at the end of all this, when I look back on my life, I want to know that I did everything I could to make the world and the world for the people around me and beyond better than when it started. And I don't know necessarily that my bank account is going to affect that. But, you know, we have to make money to live and survive and do the things we want to do. So that's, you know, a necessary evil of being in the business. But it's also fun for me as a puzzle, is figuring out how we make it when things are changing around us all the time. But yes, yeah, service, I think, is the most important thing. And I think in an age right now where people are feeling very disconnected, and you know, people are talking about this loneliness epidemic that is happening, especially with our young people. I'm very concerned about that, and so I am leaning hard into building community. So even last week, Wita Michael and I put on an event called Share Table, and it was for food entrepreneurs. Mm. And I felt like, you know, we together felt like, you know, it is an underserved population, because we're all kind of isolated doing our own thing because people are busy. But can we have this event where we can all come together and talk about things that we're going through in real time, challenges that we all are facing, and meet other people that are going through the same thing, so we can have friends that are in our same industry helping each other. And when we build community, we build a stronger world, and that benefits everyone. So I think that service piece is vital to what we're doing, beyond us, you know, handing you a scoop of ice cream and you giving us money in exchange. It's beyond that. It is really about how do we take care of our neighbors. And ice cream for me is just the vehicle for doing that.
And I love hearing about that event and the work you're doing to empower food entrepreneurs in the community. And just like, it's just interesting, like, it sounds like even though you're a business, you're focusing more on the collaboration rather than the competition. And like, I mean, even investing in and uplifting others who could potentially be competitors with you.
Sure.
Right? So like, what kind of, can you tell us more about what inspires that?
Well, I think it is very easy to think that, you know, competitiveness is better than collaboration. And I'm not saying I'm going to give away all my state secrets to everyone that asks, but I do think there can be an essence of being in the same boat together and being collaborative with, you know, people in the community. I love doing collabs with other local small businesses, especially ones that have kind of started with us, and we have our journeys together. I think there's nothing better than doing those kind of collaborations. So, you know, from a promotional and, you know, advertising kind of sense, like, there's that. But then I think this idea of collaboration over competitiveness at least is the way I would like to go, because I don't mind sharing information. And if I can save someone time by giving them info that they don't have, then yay. I'm here to cheer on all these other entrepreneurs, because I think entrepreneurship is awesome. And I think a lot of times, if all it would take is someone saying, I believe in you and you can do it, here's some data to help support your journey, and if you need help, come back. Because I know, like, Rob Perez, Weta Michael, Dan, like, all these folks have, like, been with us from very much the, like, beginning, and have always been so open and willing to share and encourage people who've been in the business a long time. So part of it is wanting to pay it forward to other people. But then, I don't know, I've seen our business grow so much from that mindset of saying, you know, we're going to find other people who are doing what we're doing, and we're going to open up the books and say, how are you doing this? I'm part of a couple of groups in the ice cream industry where people are willing to share, you know, what they do and vendors they use. And it has been the most wonderful type of relationship. And we share collectively. And we have found that if collectively we can all do better, then that lifts the industry, and then it lifts, you know, us personally. And I have not found being closed off and, you know, holding everything tight to my chest being anything that's beneficial to us. And it's just not my nature either. So I don't really know how to be any other way.
And what advice do you give to, like, individuals or to groups who hope to start a business or kind of a movement like you're doing, especially those who want to kind of put Kentucky on the global map and show what our Commonwealth offers?
I love Kentucky. And I tried to leave, and then I boomeranged back because I just love it here so much. And I think Kentucky is, like, hot on the map right now. And with, you know, new business coming in, especially Lexington is such a great hub for starting a business, because I think there are so many people who are collaborative and who want to see other entrepreneurs succeed, even though we do have a lot of chains here too. But I think it has been the greatest environment to start a business in. So even if I wanted to sell fax machines tomorrow, I think there'd be a whole community of people who are like, that sounds weird, but we'll support you and, you know, go for it. And, but yes, the advice I would give is, like, you just have to believe so delusionally that it'll work, because, you know, we had so many people in the beginning also telling us that that's never going to work. I don't want your strange ice cream. I don't know why is it so expensive? And I just believed in it so much that I just blocked out all that noise. So I think sometimes you just have to ignore people who maybe have your best interest at heart, but you have to believe so deeply in it yourself that it might feel a little crazy, and that's okay. Feeling crazy is okay in the process. That's the advice I'll give.
That's good. I appreciate hearing that for some of the struggles I face. So. What are key leadership lessons you've learned from different, like, pop culture sources, whether, like, from books, movies, or television?
Yeah, well, Ted Lasso is one. Oh, yeah. We talked about that. I do love watching what Jesse Cole has done with the Savannah Bananas. He actually has a book called Fans First, which I am working through right now. I'm not a big reader, but I do have a little collection of books that I'm trying to work through. That talks about, you know, putting fans first and how he built it. And if you follow his story, you want to talk about delusion in people not believing in something that you're doing, and, you know, see how he's grown now because he put fans first. So I think that idea is really interesting. And then Unreasonable Hospitality is another book that Will Gadara has written. It's also a yellow book. Both of them are yellow books, but he talks about this idea that you're doing things that are wildly unreasonable on paper, but it's the thing that makes the biggest impact. And I feel like that is what has made the difference for us as a business, because I grew up with seeing my dad do those things that were unreasonable. That didn't seem like, why would you, you know, drive this 2 hours to somebody because they wanted it? Well, because I want to go make this person happy, and it's going to make their day, and it's going to feel extra special because you made that extra effort. So that's what that book talks about. But yeah, I think anymore now, there's so many resources that talk about these different ideas. But I tend to lean into those more positive, how can we serve people better type content. And that is kind of the space that I'm in right now.
Amazing. I love hearing about the Savannah Bananas. I've seen a lot of their fun videos, mm-hmm. very motivational. And I think kind of you mentioning that ties well into Crank and Boom's mission of like creating joy, igniting laughter, and inspiring compassion. Like it's kind of, I can see that message with them too.
So. Yeah, 100%.
And who are your most important leadership role models, whether like fictional or like real people?
I'd say my parents, 100%. It's funny because when we took over the restaurant, I think I felt like there's so many things that I wanted to do different. And then now, almost 15 years later, after I've gone through my whole leadership journey, I tend to come back to all the things that they were doing, which I think is kind of funny. They focus so much on the real fundamentals, you know, great product, take care of your team, take care of your customers, just real basic, no fluff. That's all you focus on. And that's what I find myself leaning back to, even though I've gone through this whole journey of, you know, what if we get investors and this and grow and all this stuff that is extra, that fundamentally, like to have a great business, those are your fundamentals that you have to have. So I'd say my parents, my family, my sister, my brother-in-law, my aunt, all those people who have been in business themselves are my biggest inspiration. As well as, you know, Weta Michael, who I think has probably been in our town, in our industry, the biggest influence on me, because she, you know, we're talking about Gordon Ramsay type leadership style that you see on TV. And I, for a long time, thought, oh, if you're in food, you got to be like that mm-hmm. to be able to be effective. And then she, when I was around her, and she didn't come and say, Tao, lesson one is do this. Just her existing and her leadership style and being around her team and absorbing how the way she is affects those people, along with me, just as her as my mentor, I have just grown so much and been able to almost be validated that this leadership style that I have and who I am is a valid leadership style. It doesn't have to be this tyrannical type style that is effective. So being able to say, same thing, you know, extroverts tend to be leaders, but there are a lot of introverts that are incredible leaders as well. So just learning that there are different types of styles and there's no one right way. So I think being around her has made a big impact. And then we talked about Rob Perez. He has been a big influence for me too, being able to be around someone so passionate and very no-nonsense, but someone who is so loving and full of love and care. And you want to talk about, you know, someone who has walked a path of their faith and what they believe and actually put the actions to those beliefs. I don't know that there's anyone better than him and his wife, Diane. So we go on and on, but those are kind of my top influence, I'd say.
Those are great local leaders and people here for sure. Are there any global leaders you look up to who inspire you?
I'm a big Barack Obama fan, always have been. And Malala is another and then Michelle Obama. We have to talk about Michelle. And I also have dreams of meeting Oprah someday. I feel like as someone who has a global influence, who has used their platform for good and wanting to better the lives of everyday people, those are the people that I follow and really mean a lot to me.
Awesome. What would you say makes Crank and Boom ice cream the best ice cream in the Commonwealth?
Oh, many things. One, it's made with love. I know that's kind of kitschy, but there are a lot of people with a lot of love that are very obsessed with the outcomes of our ice cream. So from that sense, from a technical stance, we use fresh ingredients. We have the highest standards of food safety. We also churn our ice cream with very little air. So when you get, if you go to the grocery store and you go pick up a cheaper pint of ice cream, it will feel very light because there's a lot of air put in, and that's why it is cheaper than what we have. We put very little air in ours. And so if you compare that one to our, like you go pick up that pint, like it'll be distinctively heavier. because we don't put a lot of air into it. And I think that is part of the unique way we make ice cream. We spin it like gelato with less air, but it has a higher butter fat. So we use a super premium 14% butter fat. We're getting into technical, nerdy ice cream things. So from a technical side, that's why it tastes better. But the other secret we have is we have someone who's been with our team for, 12-ish years, who was with me at the old restaurant too. And he tastes every single batch of ice cream that gets run. And so his palate is calibrated to my palate because we've worked together for so long. And so I trust him with making every single batch of ice cream and ensuring that every batch tastes amazing. So since we use fresh ingredients like strawberries, those strawberries change their water content, sugar content. And so him having the palate to calibrate and make sure all those batches taste amazing is great. So he's one of our secrets, as well as just how we do things. And then it's served by people who care about anyone that comes in our doors. And so I think that is what makes the difference. The crank-a-boom difference.
Well, these things are making me, my tummy's been rumbling.
I know. So well, we have ice cream here, so you can have that when we're done.
I'll definitely dig into that. We started this story with this interview with your six-word story. Now I want to hear, what would you say is your six-word legacy? And that's six words you hope people think about and that they remember about you with your impact on Kentucky and the world.
Oh, I like that. I would hope that the legacy would be care, kindness, compassion, joy, laughter. Okay, that's five. Good times and good friends, good food. That's more than six words, but I hope that is what I am remembered for. I could really care less about the business side of that piece, but I hope that when people remember me of however many years from now, if I'm not here, that they remember good times and that maybe I made their life a little lighter and happier because I was around.
Yeah, for sure. I'll say whenever I've gotten ice cream from Crank and Boom, it's been a great community there. I've enjoyed it. I'll be enjoying those pints today. So
yes,
you're definitely succeeding with that.
That's
with that
good.
Legacy.
Thank you.
Tal, thank you so much for taking the time for this interview. Really appreciate getting to meet you and to hear your amazing story and to just hear about the amazing things Crank and Boom will continue doing.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That wraps up my conversation with Tal Green. I loved hearing Tal share how her family has guided her throughout her life. It was so inspirational to hear how she turned her family's Thai restaurant experience into a new venture that uses ice cream as a vehicle for caring for her community and her employees. She truly has made it a soft place to land for anyone, and her shop has become a space of joy, laughter, and compassion, truly living her motto of good times, good friends, and good food. And it shows that ice cream is truly a sweet vehicle for taking care of others. Crank and Boom has two locations here in Lexington, one in our distillery district at 1210 Manchester Street, and the second location is at 3101 Clay's Mill Road, Suite 301. My next episode drops in July, and it will feature Jimmy Chadwell, president of Voices of Hope. Until then, remember to live local and think global, fellow changemakers.